Hello and welcome to this AAT podcast on coaching and delegation skills. My name is Tracy Sinclair. A manager wears many hats and plays many roles. And a good manager knows which of those hats to wear at a given time for a particular situation. The good manager has the flexibility and range to adopt different styles and use different techniques in order to get the very best outcome each time. In this podcast, we are going to look at the two specific areas of job skills coaching and delegation. In order to undertake both of these activities well, it is important to be prepared to invest a little time into understanding the individual, so that you can assess how they will best learn and then take responsibility for a particular task. Unfortunately, in many cases this time is not invested for one reason or another, and so the process either fails or is less effective than it could be. This can cause frustrations and challenges for everyone, and can also mean that ultimately even more time is spent in addressing the rework, for example. It is also worth noting that the more effective your job skills coaching is, the more smoothly and swiftly the delegation process is likely to progress. Coaching information. It is very important to prepare for your skills coaching session by obtaining some relevant information. This may include some of the following points. First of all, is coaching required, or would another form of development activity be more appropriate? What level of experience, if any, does the person already have? What standard is ultimately required? Can the standard be achieved in one session or several sessions? Is the expected standard realistic? What is the person's preferred learning style? What is my preferred coaching style? Is the task interesting? Will the person be interested in or motivated to learn the task? How much time will be required? How much time is available? What facilities, materials, or equipment will be required? Will the coaching fit into the person's current workload? Will the new task, once learnt, fit into the person's workload? What type of coaching is this? Is it to maintain their standard, to develop them, or is it a corrective measure? What are the person's objectives for the coaching? And what are the coaching session objectives? Skills coaching overview. Coaching is the process of helping someone learn from experience. The three key words here are helping, learning, and experience. Your role is to help them so that they may learn something new, and the way you do this is by giving them an experience. So, skills coaching is a practical activity, not just something you tell someone how to do. Learning from experience involves the following four steps. 1. Having the experience. You can either let the experience come to you, which is reactive, or consciously seek it out, being proactive. Step 2 is reviewing the experience. This means objectively and actively reflecting upon what has happened. Step 3. Concluding from the experience. The objective here is to draw conclusions and form ideas and beliefs based on the experience. Step 4. Planning. This involves converting some or all of the conclusions into appropriate actions for the future. Now let us look at each of these stages in turn. Step 1. Providing the experience. Opportunities for coaching come in various forms. They could be areas of a current job where performance could be improved, a new job or task, delegated tasks, or different approaches to an existing job or task. Whatever the opportunity is, it is very important to set a clear and reasonable coaching goal. This goal should articulate specifically what the person should be able to do when the coaching process is complete. Note that I said coaching process, as in some cases, the coaching is not a one-off intervention and may form part of a series of development sessions undertaken with the person over a given period of time. One of the most effective ways to establish a coaching goal, or indeed any type of goal for that matter, is to use the SMART technique. Writing SMART objectives. Objectives will tend to emerge naturally from a discussion about the person's achievement and progress, areas of difficulty and development opportunities. These objectives must be clear-cut and not simply vague statements of intent. SMART stands for S for specific. The objective should be specific and clear enough so that anyone involved can understand it, know what is meant by it, and exactly what it is that will be accomplished. If in doing this, the objective appears to be overloaded with detail, then there may in fact be more than one objective contained within. In this case, they should be split out. Or perhaps the objective is referencing sub-activities or criteria, in which case they could be referred in an appendix to the objectives. M is for measurable. Include a performance standard. When objectives are measurable, it is easier to agree later on what has been achieved. The objective needs to be measurable in order for its progress to be monitored and to demonstrate its ultimate completion. Measures will usually hinge around the criteria of cost, time, quality, and/or quantity. A is for achievable. The individual must have the necessary baseline skills or knowledge to achieve the new coaching objective. Otherwise, perhaps we are looking at establishing a preliminary objective first. This is where an understanding of the individual and their current level of capability is very important. A is also for agreed and/or accepted. In order for the skills coaching to be a success, the objective needs to be agreed by the other person. It is preferable that it is also accepted if true support and buy-in are to be achieved. This highlights the difference between seeking the person's commitment to the task and completing it well, or just their compliance. R is for realistic. The coaching objective must be realistic. Does the individual have the ability, the time, and the resources available to do this? The objectives should be stretching but achievable and will vary depending on the person's capabilities. This is where progressive coaching sessions over time are very relevant. Objectives that are too hard or too easy will demotivate. Another meaning for the letter R is whether the objective is clearly relevant to the person and how their work efforts support the overall aim of the department, team, or project that they are working on. And finally, T is for time bound. Include target dates. Specify when the results must be achieved. And don't leave an objective open-ended. It is also important to consider and build in the three components of action, standard, and condition. Action. What is the person actually going to do? Standard. What level of performance is expected or required? And condition. Under what conditions or in what circumstances will the task need to be achieved? 10 simple rules of learning. When planning and preparing for the skills coaching session, it may be helpful to take into account the following 10 simple rules of learning. 1. The capabilities of learners are important in determining what can be learned and how long it can take. 2. The order of presentation of materials to be learnt is very important. 3. Showing errors in how to do something can lead to increased learning. 4. The rate of forgetting tends to be very rapid immediately after learning. 5. Repetition of identical materials is often as effective in getting things remembered as repeating the same story but with variations. 6. Knowledge of results leads to increased learning. 7. A message is more easily learned and accepted if it does not interfere with earlier habits. 8. The mere repetition of a situation does not necessarily lead to learning. Two things are necessary: belongingness and satisfaction. 9. Learning is aided by active practice rather than passive reception. And 10. Learning something new can interfere with the remembering of something earlier. Step 2. Reviewing the experience. When doing this step with the person, use open questions to encourage them to talk about the experience so that it can be fully reviewed. What did you do? How did it work? What aspects went particularly well? What problems did you face? How did you or how will you deal with them? Use active listening skills to support the discussion and help the person reflect upon their actions. Use summaries and recaps. Show empathy and interest. Give feedback if appropriate. One of the most powerful coaching tools is the use of questions. Here are some questions which can be useful either during or after the skills coaching session. Why do it this way? Why do this at this stage? How or where does this fit into the overall picture? What do we do next? What are the safety implications here? What would happen if we didn't do this? How do we put that right? What have we done so far? When does this not apply? Which option should we choose? Or which option should we accept? How will this situation develop from here? How do you feel about taking that action? Remember that the coach's tone of voice and body language are just as important as the words used. Step 3. Concluding from the experience. Use open questions again to encourage the person to draw their conclusions. What have they learnt from this exercise? In hindsight, what might they have done differently? This is where you can offer advice based on your own experiences or introduce a specific skill or technique that may help the person to draw more sound and appropriate conclusions. Step 4. Action planning. Encourage the person to identify situations in which the learning can be applied. Get them to commit to some actions on paper. For example, what will you start doing as a result of the exercise? What will you stop doing as a result of the exercise? What will you continue to do or do more of as a result of the exercise? An important part of coaching is encouraging by showing that you believe in the person's abilities to achieve their objectives. This is why it is vital that the coaching objectives are realistic in the first place. You also need to empower the person by getting them to believe that they have control over what they do. They can choose their behaviour. They are responsible for both their failures and their successes. Sometimes people will deny this and blame their lack of success on other people or things they believe are outside of their control. You must encourage them to recognise their contribution to their own successes and failures with questions like, what did you do that caused this effect? What did you do to make it worse? What did you do to make it better? What didn't you do? What could you have done? The coaching plan. Having considered the 4 steps to the learning experience, now let's pull this together so that we can see how the skills coaching process will flow. Before the session, obtain relevant coaching information, set the coaching objectives, and arrange the practicalities, like time, place, duration, materials and equipment required, etc. During the coaching process, consider this 4-step model. Step 1. Explain and show the learner how to do the task. Step 2. Do it again while the learner tells you what to do and prompts you. Step 3. the learner tries it themselves. Step 4. The learner does it correctly alone. After the session, review and reflect. Give feedback, draw conclusions, and plan next steps, which is the application of the learning or further learning, for example. Something to consider for the four-step model during the coaching session is that if someone goes from step one through to step four very, very quickly, what might this tell you? Perhaps it means that the coaching objective could be set in a more challenging and stretching way. If, however, the learner is struggling and moving in a cycle between steps 2 and 3 and is struggling to meet step 4, what might this tell you? Perhaps the coaching objective is too challenging, or perhaps your instructions and way of coaching is unclear and therefore less effective for the learner. Reviewing your own performance as a coach. Once the coaching session is complete, take some time for yourself to reflect upon your own performance now. Consider asking yourself some of these questions. Was the coaching objective SMART? Was the coaching objective clearly stated? Was the session properly introduced? To what extent was the four-step model used? Was the session interesting? Were the coaching instructions clear? Was the session conducted in a logical order? Did the session flow smoothly? Did you go through the task in easy stages? Did you check understanding and did you give encouragement? Did you ask questions? Did you invite questions from the learner? Did you watch out for difficulties and prompt accordingly? Did you finally allow the learner to complete the task alone without intervention? Did you offer praise throughout? Was the session finished properly? Overall, what went particularly well? And overall, what is the main area for improvement? So, what are the skills of a good job skills coach? A good coach would be a good listener, enthusiastic, able to motivate, patient and sensitive, credible and innovative, able to set realistic targets, able to plan the coaching properly, flexible and able to give balanced feedback, open to new ideas, able to allow learners to make mistakes, able to allow learners to apply their own style to a task when appropriate, supportive and personally interested and involved. Delegation. Now we will move on to look at the area of delegation. Take a moment to consider your working environment and your working practices. Do you take any decisions that could be taken by a member of your staff? Do you work longer hours than your staff? When you come back after a holiday or absence from the office, is there a backlog of emails needing action? Are you often interrupted by your staff asking for information or a decision? Do you like being kept informed about the details of what your staff are doing? Do you sometimes find that your staff won't take responsibility for their actions? If you were suddenly called away for a month, could anybody else do your job properly? Do you often have to rush to meet deadlines? Do you feel it is better to do something yourself instead of delegating it? And when your staff have completed a task, do you check the details just to make sure? If you can identify with one or more of these situations, then perhaps this indicates a possibility or an opportunity for you to consider more delegation. Effective delegation. The points below will help you to delegate successfully. 1. Decide precisely the activities to be delegated and when. Do not leave things on broad canvas level where details can get lost. This is again where the SMART objectives technique can be very helpful. Make sure that the member of staff you choose is either capable of doing the job and has the necessary knowledge and training, or eventually will be over time with training. 3. Explain why as well as how. Do not assume that they know as much as you do, even if you have worked together for a long time. 4. Set and explain the goal, the results that have to be achieved. 5. Let real authority go with formal authority. 6. Know your member of staff's workload and help them establish priorities. 7. Always fix deadlines. If the task is large, fix the deadlines as you go. 8. Tell the person when you intend to follow up on the task and do so. 9. Show clearly that you have confidence in that person's ability to do the job. 10. Delegate to others in the way that you would like your manager to delegate to you. Explain what is to be done and make sure that the other person has understood completely. 11. Do not accept problems, but request solutions. Otherwise, you will find that your staff delegate upwards to you. 12. Always give positive feedback for a good piece of work. 13. Remember that intelligent people learn from mistakes, so allow them to happen. 14. Work out a system to keep track of what has been delegated and when it is expected. Delegation and control. tasks are delegated when you ask a member of staff or colleague to undertake a task on your behalf, i.e., one which you would otherwise have to do yourself. You delegate the task and not the final responsibility for its successful execution. The latter situation remains with you. Why delegate? Well, to make more time for yourself and to avoid overload. Because someone in the group may be better fitted for the task than you. To develop the person you have delegated the task to. To add interest to someone's job. And to fully utilise the time, energy and talent of the group or team. When do you not delegate? Well, when failure will result in major disaster. Just because you do not like doing the job yourself. This becomes abdication and not delegation. When the task is clearly beyond the abilities of the individual you are delegating to. And when the person you are delegating to has no confidence that they can do the job. How to delegate? Define the task. Brief the individual. Cover objectives, timescales, resources, constraints, and review processes. Inform others. You may need to explain to others that you have delegated the task and that the person doing it has your authority and support. Review progress. Set review dates, progress reports and standards. Troubleshoot and coach to overcome problems. Resist the temptation to over-supervise or snatch the job back at the first sign of difficulty. Here is a systematic approach to delegation. Invest the time to delegate effectively and decide upon the task to be delegated. Where does it begin and end? Who will you delegate the task to and how will it benefit them? Break the task down into manageable chunks so that you can teach them one at a time. In what sequence will it be best to master each chunk? Plan in timescales including review points. Discuss and agree the plan with the individual. Get their contribution and feedback. Confirm the plan. What extra resources will they need in terms of time, budget, materials or equipment, staff, training, and authority? Implement the plan chunk by chunk. Coach, action, monitor, review, and feedback. Hand over responsibility in stages, ensuring success at each stage. Hand over the complete task when you are both confident, and then continue to support, but do not interfere. A range of approaches to delegation. The delegation process is not black and white, and there is not a single appropriate style. Rather, there are a range of approaches that can be taken depending upon the person's level of skill and experience. In the beginning, your style may be one which is more directive and instructional. And as the person's skill develops, you will begin to adopt an increasingly hands-off approach until finally the task is handed over to them entirely. Here are a range of approaches you might consider to adopt during the delegation process. Do exactly as I tell you. Here, the manager regularly instructs the staff member, and this may be necessary for inexperienced staff, but uncomfortable and inconvenient for everybody. Follow procedures, bringing anything new to me. In this style, the manager sets out procedures for the main task. The staff member has to learn to identify that a task is not covered by the procedure, and so the manager must be consulted. During this phase, the manager has to learn to be patient, no matter how many times the member of staff has to ask. Brief me, and I'll decide what to do. The staff member is responsible for finding out as much as possible about a new situation in order to brief the manager. The manager is responsible for biting his or her tongue and allowing the staff member to actually do the research. You decide, but consult me before acting. In this case, the staff member has to brief him or herself and then identify possible actions before finally working out the pros and cons of each and choosing one. The manager has to encourage the staff member to think and evaluate, not just make lucky guesses. We'll meet to discuss key decisions. In this style, the manager and the staff member identify key decisions and meet to confirm the staff member's actions before he or she takes them. Keep me informed regularly. This stage is not quite as safe as the preceding one, but is approaching true delegation. Inform me as you think fit. At this point in the process, the manager trusts the staff member's judgment and discretion almost completely. Finally, do as you think fit. Accountability for the task has now passed from the manager to the staff, and the staff member is probably now the boss. This concludes the podcast on coaching and delegation skills. I do hope you found this useful, and thank you very much for listening.